Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayevsky. This is Parshas Kisisa, Part 2. And if you missed Tuesday night, you don't necessarily need to catch up, but it's a good idea. We discussed certain problems with the Maaseh Egel, which actually tie into the Parshas Purim. Of course, we know when we read all the halachos of Parshas Purim, of the Parah Aduma, are we call it Zoschu Kas HaTorah, not we call it, but Hashem says Zoschu Kas HaTorah, and this is the Parah Aduma, is the one that is so unfathomable that even the other mitzvos, which are listed as skukim, but the Parah Aduma seems the most likely to have no reason. And of course, the main reason that it seems so problematic is that, as opposed to all other karbonas, the people involved in preparing the karbonas are not necessarily, don't become tummy in the preparation of the, once the animal is slaughtered, all the people involved in the bringing of the karbon do not become tummy, as opposed to the karbon parah aduma. When the parah aduma is brought, then of course not brought in the Beis HaMikdash, it's brought outside, it's slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash because it's to be mechaper for Tumah. And we don't want to bring the Tumah into the Beis HaMikdash, obviously. But of course, we know it's metame hatahorim, and then it's metahares hatameim. And that seems, of course, very problematic. And I seem to remember last year that we mentioned that there's one very interesting reason for that, is that when we do something that is unnecessary, when we bring a regular carbon, all the necessities that the people who are preparing the carbon, it is necessary for them to do. But the aftermath of the ashes and the sprinkling of the water of the Parah Aduma for the people that are doing it, for them it's totally unnecessary. So when they came in a state of Tahara, since they were involved with a dead animal, they therefore become tummy. But the same ashes and the same water that made that person that had the tumas mace, and now he's trying to become tahar, the ashes and the water sprinkling on him. But of course, this is something that God has commanded, and we can't really ask why, and many people try to, but that's certainly a speculation. One of the interesting factors is the two-step process, which tells us so much. Normally, when somebody has a ritual impurity for various reasons, he goes to the mikveh after a certain amount of time where he's impure, and then he goes to the mikveh, uvoh ha-shemesh v'toher. The parah aduma, after a tumas meis, it's a two-step process. It's v'chito bayom ha-shlishi, and then he has to go to the mikvah on the third day, and then after that, he has to wait another 4 days. And this is to elucidate and to emphasize the fact of the tumas meis. And more than that, which is something very unusual, it says, kol habo al ohel v'kol asher bo ohel. We could understand, most things that make us tameh, we would have to touch them. But here is, if somebody is in an ohel, in a place where a dead somebody passes away, at least on some level we could understand. But somebody who wasn't even there when the person died and he walks in, the ohel, the confinement, the area where he's in, the dead body makes him tameh, even if he didn't touch the body, he's in the same place. And that's why, generally speaking, we know it's very interesting. I know my mother told me many years ago that my mother was a Bas Kohen, and her father was, when he was a teenager, he was in a yeshiva, and somebody passed away in the vicinity there, in the apartment or the dormitory. And he woke up in the middle, somebody woke him up in the middle of the night, his friend, and said, "Vaya tidachun." And he said, "Get dressed." He didn't tell him why, but he said, "Get dressed." But I don't know if my grandfather understood that, but of course, he put on his clothes so that he wouldn't have to go outside in the middle of the winter without his winter clothes on. he understood, because that would be the requirement, is to run out the minute you find out there's a dead body in the place, you would have to leave. Of course, today we all have a Cheskas Tumah, but the one thing that's left, of course, is a Kohen is still enjoined from getting near a dead body. We don't go to cemeteries and things like that. And in fact, we find that the burial places of Kohanim, many times, I've seen it in many cemeteries, are along the outer rim of the cemetery. So family members who might want to pay their respects to a dear departed one will be able to see the matseva from the outside of the fence, provided, of course, there's not a tree overhanging the fence. But that's getting away from the issue at hand. What we have here is a situation here where this is a chok, and this is something that's very unusual, the way it takes place. And it's very important to go through this chok and this parsha, because the same way this is totally not understandable in terms of the way it operates, this is very appropriate for the parsha of the Egel. And what I mean by that is, when the people who were guilty of the Egel, there was, as we know, there's an English saying, if you're not part of the if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Many people would want to know, why should Klal Yisrael, if there were only a few thousand people, and not only that, but the Erev Rav, the mixed multitudes were the one who were guilty of instigating the whole incident in the first place by getting Aaron to do it. They created a mob scene, and Aaron, out of fear for his life, not necessarily fear for his life, but as I mentioned on Tuesday, he had in mind to take one for the team, so to speak. But nevertheless, he was still guilty of being complicit in the whole act, which the Torah lays in his lap. But at this point in time, after he does it, Moshe is asking forgiveness for Klal Yisrael, and God readily gives it to him. And God tells him, Lech Necheyesu'am, go make them feel better, which he attempts to do. But initially, he sets up his tent, Harchek Min HaMachaneh. And then God says, we can't be both angry with him at the same time. So he says, V'shovel HaMachaneh. After God spoke to him, he told him to go back and make them feel better and tell him, I'm going to give them another chance. But if that's the case, God was placated so readily, then what was the point of getting so upset in the first place? Because he says he understands that these are an Am Kashei Oref, and that's our nature. But there's more at stake over here. We have one of the main problems that we have in the whole that everybody seems to have an opinion on is something that's very interesting. In Mishpatim, when God says to Moshe, Hinei Malachi Yelech Lefonecho Lishmarcho Badorech, I will send a malach along with you to watch over you while your travels in the desert. Of course, at this point in time, they figure it's only going to be a short trip. And Moshe does not complain. In this week's parsha, when God tells him that ki yelech malachi lefonecha, he tells him that I'm going to send you v'shalachti lefonecha malach. I'm going to send you a malach because I'm very angry. And this time, even though he says it's a malach, and it seems to be the same conditions that he said in Mishpatim when Moshe had no problems with it, and now what would be the problem at this point? What changed? It doesn't seem to be on the surface that anything changed. Of course, it's the attitude that God had, but Moshe wasn't concerned before, and now he is, that God is not going to go with them. And of course, as we pointed out in past times, is the operative words in Mishpatim was Lishmarcha Baderach. There's a big difference between having a tour guide and a security force watching over you. So in Mishpatim, God is traveling with them as a security force to make sure. Here, when a tour guide is just taking you along and you're following him, he's showing you the way. It's like having a GPS. It doesn't assure you any level of safety. And that's the difference in terms. But nevertheless, in Mishpatim, one might think that God would do it the same way, and Moshe had no complaints. And what we see from here is something very interesting, that when God says to Moshe over here that I'm going to send you a malach, And Moshe says, I don't quite understand. But what doesn't Moshe quite understand? And what he's concerned about is something very simply. Moshe said that, of course, he complains to God that maybe you took them out too soon. But, of course, after Matan Torah, after seeing the revelation at Har Sinai, you would think that they got to the point where there's nothing that can change them. They've experienced God on the closest level possible, more than most Nevi'im in the future would ever have the experience of, like we see Yechezkel and Yeshaya, who were able to have the vision of God and his Kisei HaKavod. And here they experience the same thing. But what the difference is over here is the reason that the Malach didn't concern Moshe previously. Because when we said, Oz Yashir Moshe, and it says, Vayaminu Vashemu V'Moshe Avdo, and Moshe was totally convinced that at this time that Bnei Yisrael finally, even after all of the Makos that Moshe did brought about seemingly with through his own power, perhaps, with his mate, by waving his magic wand, as we've mentioned previously, and everything was going along swimmingly. But only at the Red Sea, when Moshe raised his hand, and he raised his stick, and he raised his hand heavenward, and it says, Neteyas Yotcha Alayam, raise your hand and not the stick. And what happened? The sea split. And at that time, Vayaminu Bashem of Moshe Avdo. And Moshe was at that time convinced that the Bnei Israel had a firm belief in God and that Moshe was just an ordinary human being. The problem becomes that is the, and after that they have Har Sinai, and that should certainly cement the relationship that God is in charge and God is completing all of these miracles, and he is the one leading the way, but Moshe Rabbeinu is just the servant that was all seemed to be well and good. But when Moshe is on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, and he comes down at the end of Mishpatim, and they know, Lechem lo achalti, umayim lo shosisi, I didn't eat and drink. They begin to once again believe, perhaps, that Moshe is not an ordinary human being. Of course, he's not. But they begin to think of him as a malach himself, as somebody that is not he's something more of a supernatural being. And therefore, when they make a new God, if they see that Moshe is running late, or they don't know if he's running late, perhaps he's not coming back. He has ascended to heaven and is not returning, and they're left rudderless, they're left without a somebody to lead them. So then they go ahead and build the Egel. And now, when Moshe comes down and he sees this, he breaks the luchos because he's utterly himself, while the luchos have been shattered, he is also shattered by the fact that he thought they would be finally ensconced in the total belief in God. But what his complaint to God is, if you're going to send a malach along, that is not a very good idea. The reason it's not a good idea is because you see what happened. They still think that I'm not a human being. Had they believed that I was just a messenger and a servant of God himself, of yours, with no supernatural powers, they would not have made the Egel. The fact that they made the Egel is that they think once again that I have being able to have this experience of being on the mountain. Who else would think if somebody would be able to have that experience of being 40 days and 40 nights without food or sleep even for 40 days, that certainly a human being, a superhuman event, and that cannot be a normal human being. Therefore, he must be on the status of at least an angel, if not godlike. And that's why Moshe says at this point, when God says to him, I will send you, I'm not going to go with you personally, I'm going to send a malach. And now he's concerned. He say, I don't understand. The problem with sending a malach before, when they had a firm belief in God, was okay. But now, if the problem is that they believe that I am a supernatural human being, then sending along a malach will only exacerbate the situation and prove to them that everything is more than one God, or what are the powers of God exactly. And it puts question marks all over again. You have to be the one taking them and leading them in the midbar yourself, because without that, things will go awry once again. You know they are, as you say, a stiff-necked people, and it has to be drilled into them that this will not work otherwise. And that's why when we get to the end of the parsha and Moshe comes down and we see something very interesting, but the fact is, so we see that he comes down and it says, Vayar kol b'nei Yisrael ki koran or p'nei Moshe, and he put a mask on. But we seem to think on some level that the mask was to avoid them seeing his face, his countenance that had shown so greatly. But the reality is that Moshe understands one thing. He wants them to see that he is a human being, but he also wants to see them to experience the glow that he was in heaven with God. And you see certain times, I remember as a child saying to my father, and this is when I was young and I would experience Rabbi Moshe Feinstein on a daily basis in yeshiva, and we would even talk, but I remember as a child saying to my father, it is something very strange when I look at his face. He always looked like he was under a sun lamp. He always looked, his face had such a shine. He was bald, and his face and head had such a red glow to it. And I made that observation. I don't know, there's something about his face. And Moshe wanted Bnei Israel to experience that. And when he wasn't there, he would put the mask on because there was no use for him to shine. That shine was for the Klal Yisrael to see that he was the face of a regular human being, but let them see that he is somebody special. And so but we get back at that point, and that's why he had to return v'shovel amachaneh, because we can't be both angry with them at the same time. You have to see the leadership, but we also have to experience. When we say v'inei einecha ro'o esmorecha, to see the faces, we look at pictures of it. It's good to see those pictures because it puts out, I know my phone saver is for my two great-grandfathers on my phone saver. I look at them, and it, so to speak, it helps me. Maybe sometimes when I'm thinking of things, I just look at my phone and I see their faces, and it stops and makes me think. And these are the things that God wanted Bnei Yisrael and Moshe realized that it's necessary. And that's what we have to do when we have our children and we lead our children. We are their example, and that's what we want them to see. Einecha ro'os merecha. We want their leadership, the people that they see leading them, to be people of quality, to be people of moral character. And we see too many times today the leaders falling by the wayside. And so we have, should somebody go off the derech, call Habo El Ho'el. We have to stay away from the tumah. It's very difficult today. There are so many things that sort of take you off to the side. There are so many distractions in life. And that's why the Torah tells us that pasuk, call Habo El Ho'el. You don't even have to do anything wrong, but if you're in the confines of places, you go to places where there are value system is not up to what you would rather be, then that's not good. Because eventually, kol habo el ohel yitma, asher bo ohel, even if you don't live there, but even visiting, kol asher bo ohel v'kol habo el ohel, even if you come in once in a while, you're there sporadically, the best thing to do is to stay away. And that's the connection to the parsha. The people who didn't even build the egel, they stood on the outside. They might have been a mile from where the egel was, possibly 2 miles away. You're talking about a few million people. Some of them maybe never even saw. They saw the smoke from the fire, but maybe a lot of them. But what is the guilt? And the guilt is they did nothing to stop it. They did nothing. They didn't speak up. And that is what God wants from us. We see an injustice. We have to raise our hand and say something. And that's why, kol habo el ohel, it's going to lead you down the primrose path. We have to stay and keep our distance from things, lest it takes us down that slippery slope. Have a good weekend. Have a nice Shabbos. I hope everybody had a pleasant Purim and didn't get too drunk. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.